Today we are going to continue talking about quantum Hall effect. So, and the first thing we will consider will be effectively we will ask how do the transitions between different quantum Hall states happen, and we will develop assuming that the random potential is slowly varying. We're going to develop semi-classical percolation picture of the quantum Hall transition. So as you maybe remember, yesterday we finished with the following picture of what happens to the Landau levels in a finite sample with disorder potential, which is only varying in the x direction. And so we ended up with a picture like that, where the Landau level energy, so it can, it effectively follows the random potential. So here this coordinate could be either the y momentum or the guiding center position. So remember, they're equivalent. And then at the edges of the sample, confining potential pushes the energy of the Landau level to infinity, giving rise to the edge states. Okay, and yesterday we saw that, okay, if your chemical potential lies here, then none of these states can conduct current, so all the action happens at the edges, and this is what ultimately leads to the quantization of the whole conductivity. So, but now let's ask what happens as we start sweeping chemical potential and as we go through this bulk states, right? So, the kinds of questions we will ask, you know, most important questions would be: so, are bulk states localized or delocalized? Right, so you remember that that if a state is localized, it means it has finite support, and then it cannot carry current, right? Then we can ignore it. So another question: is there delocalized state which can take you from one edge of the sample to the other? And if there is, at what energy? Delocalized, or we will call it extended state. Is there extended state in the disorder potential? In general, how does the transition between the state? So let's say if chemical potential is here, right, we know that we are dealing with a quantum Hall state with conductivity E squared over H, right? So it's state one with sigma xy equal E squared over H. But if we now lower chemical potential all the way here, right, let's call it mu two, then here we just have no carrier, so this is a trivial insulator with a zero Hall conductivity, right? So we're going to ask how does the transition between states with sigma xy E squared over H, so this is a quantum Hall state, and sigma xy equals zero happens, right? So what is the nature of this transition? And obviously, to answer these questions, we have to consider a general disorder potential, which varies in both x and y directions. But let me again make an assumption, which is going to make our life a lot easier. So let me assume that this random potential is smooth, right? So let me tell you what it means and what is the physical, you know, why this approximation even turns out to describe some realistic situations, right? So we are going to assume, first of all, that the, most importantly, we are going to assume that the potential varies on the scale of the magnetic length. It's going to change by much less than the cyclotron energy. Okay, so effectively it means it's slow on the scale of the magnetic length, right? And reason why this is a good limit to consider is effectively because then to some degree semi-classical approximation holds, as we will see. And the physical basis for why this approximation is not so bad for certain transistor-like devices is the following. So in those devices, 2D electron gas lives inside some three-dimensional semiconducting structure, right? So this is your structure and this is your 2D electron gas. Donors which are used to effectively dope this layer which are source of the most disorder usually leave some distance d away from the electron gas, right? So here you have ions, right? So and this distance is usually pretty large. Okay, so which means that if you are looking at the potential created by these donors in the plane of the 2D electron gas, it's going to be quite smooth. It's going to only vary on the scale d. Okay, so yeah.
So implicit in this is the fact that you can make this layer mm-hmm. with no interface roughness or anything like that. You can make
right.
it perfect.
Right.
So
right.
The only disorder is coming from the donors wherever they are.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
Which is this pretty is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was actually. Interestingly enough, right? It was really this technological advance, right? People learning how to make really clean 2D electron gas and developing this doping techniques where you can dope it without messing it up too much, right? That led to the discovery of the first integer and then fractional quantum Hall effect. So without this technology, probably people wouldn't know about it until now. So so once the magnetic field becomes strong enough such that d is much greater than the magnetic length, you are good, right? You are within this limit. So, but also keep in mind that in fact things that we will obtain are much more universal, so they don't require this assumption. Okay, but it's just an easy shortest route to seeing the essential physics. So let's recall what does an electron do when you apply potential. So yesterday we learned that if you plot energy of Landau levels in a constant electric field, again as a function of ky or right, it's equivalent. Right, it's the same as guiding center position. Then we learn that electric field simply bends, tilts the Landau levels, right? And effectively, we are dealing with the plane waves which are moving across the constant x coordinate, right? So they follow the lines of constant potential. Now, physical reason for that is that Landau levels are flat, right? So you have effectively no kinetic energy. So usually when you're thinking about a particle in the absence of magnetic field moving in some potential, right? It can go to the region of high potential by sacrificing its kinetic energy. But here it's not the case, right? So here you have no kinetic energy, so you're forced to effectively follow the lines of the constant potential energy. This is the reason. And from this argument also, you can see that now if we go to a more general 2D random potential, right? So let's plot it. So it just does something. So V as a function of coordinate does something like that, right? So it can be either positive or negative. It's random. So but you see that if you now let an electron move in this potential, it's going to effectively follow the lines of equipotential, right? So because locally it just feels that okay, electric field is pointing along the gradient of potential, so I'm going to move perpendicular to it, all right? So Okay, so the electrons would make closed orbits following the equipotential lines, and let's think what these would orbits look like as a function of energy, right? So let's start going from very negative energy, and then go all the way across the Landau level. So you see, okay, so when we just start crossing the Landau level, right? So let's call it energy E1. Then there would be very rare regions of the potential where, just fluctuation happened to be such that the energy is below E1, right? So we are going to have very rare small closed orbits, right? And the electron, so you know that the electrons are going to drift. They can, at this energy, they can drift along this orbit, right? So then you can, in order to get the quantum states in the spectrum, you would simply impose Bohr-Sommerfeld quantization condition, and you'll get your true quantum energy levels. Okay, so but the point is that this orbits are very rare, and clearly they're going to be localized. Right, there is no communication between them. So now. Let's ask what happens as we start increasing this energy, right? Clearly the orbits are going to get larger, right? But for a while they will still stay localized, right? As long as they're not generally overlapping, right? They will still localize. They will still get stay localized, right? So this would be, let's say, E1, then E2, somewhere higher here, right? And so on. So now, same thing is going to happen if we are at a very high energy, right? So if we're at energy, let's call it E1 prime, then the what's going to happen, we are going to find this very rare maxima, right? And those are the only orbits we can follow at a given energy. Okay, and actually, to think about this problem, the following analogy is quite useful. So let's think about this profile of the random potential as some kind of landscape. Okay, so it has some dips, some hills, and so on, right? And now let's start filling it with water. Okay, so you see that first you would fill the deepest wells, right? So they will give you small lakes effectively, right? And electrons can move around these lakes. So then if you nearly fill the whole thing up to here, right? So this is the limit, low filling, right? Or low chemical potential, which is the same thing. Potential. So here you have lakes, right? Right. In the opposite limit, where you have a lot of electrons sitting here, you would have very rare regions of positive potential where electrons don't go, right? And the rest is filled. The rest is filled with electrons. Right, so in this limit, you can. So this is high chemical potential. Here you have small islands, right? Of sort of dry land, right? So this is islands. And once again, electrons can only move around these islands, and of course, because their motion is chiral, so here they move this way. Here they would have to move the opposite way, right? Because the effectively, when your direction is fixed by the direction of the magnetic field. Okay, so when you drift, you have to see your you have to see the region of the low potential on your left, right? So that's just what you get from the vector product when you think about the drift. Now, of course, we know that in this limit we also have the edge states, right? So here, if you recall that the sample is finite, you're also bound to have the edge states, right, going, which are propagating the opposite way, right? Well, I think it's actually this way, right? Because you're supposed. Yes, so here, so no, these are maxima. Oh, these are maxima, sure. So here it's maximum, so I think it's okay. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and now, let's ask how does the transition between these two happen, right? So, clearly there is symmetry, right, between lakes at low chemical potential and the islands in the high chemical potential, right? And at some point you go through the at some value of chemical potential, you go through the point where you can for the first time, you know, cross your system by the sea, right? And from the symmetry you can see this is going to happen exactly when the chemical potential is in the middle, okay? When the area of the lakes is equal to the area of the islands. Okay, so this is where you can make it from one end to the other either by the sea or by the land, and this is where things change, as we will see in a second. So at this point, clearly things would look like that. So we will have you know, lake and then island and then another lake and another island, right, and so on. So another lake. And let's say this is the physical edge of the sample, right? So then what do electrons do? So this is a very special point where mu is exactly at the energy of the Landau level. Right, so this is a point where, well, plus average value of the random potential, right, to take into account, you know, if there is some offset in the random potential. So let's think about the electronic orbits at this point, right? You see that, okay, so here it will go this way. Here it will go this way, right, this way, right, so, and this way. And now you see that going along these orbits, you can make it, right, you can make it from any point to any other point, right? So this states start percolating, right? So you have a complicated network of the electron orbits which connects you know, effectively one edge of the sample to the other. Okay, so this hints to you that at this point the nature of the electronic states changes and the states become extended rather than localized, right? And this makes sense because this is exactly the point where the edge states form, right? So if you, for example, let's think what happens if we go slightly away from this point, right? If we decrease chemical potential slightly, then effectively we are going to change the area of the water a little bit, right? So we will go to the regime where we have lakes, right? And there can be no edge states. And if you increase it a little bit, then you're going to make the land region smaller, right? So these guys will really connect, right? And there will be sort of a river connecting the whole thing. And then this river is bound to have shores, right? Which would be exactly your edge states, right? And it is the extended state at this energy which can effectively which can connect the opposite edge states and turn them around, Right? This is the only thing that can kill edge states and the whole quantization. Right? So this tells us that, in fact, this is a critical point, right, where the transition between the two quantum Hall phases, between the phase with, right, so this is critical point. So, and it is at this critical point where the conductivity is gonna jump, right? So this is mu star. We know that if mu is less than mu star, then the whole conductivity is zero, right? If it's more than mu star, it's E squared over H, it's quantized. And in this very, very naive and idealized quasi-classical picture, it's just gonna jump sharply, right, from one value to the other. And sure enough, at this point, longitudinal conductivity would also be finite. It will be some delta function, right? Because in this point you can see, right, that your electrons can go here, right? They can separate and either go there or there, right, and so on. So, but the bottom line is that they can make it all the way across the sample. So there would be finite longitudinal conductivity. Now, of course, this picture is quite naive. So there are several things that we did not take into account, right? So for example, we did not take into account that in fact these states are not lines, right? But they have finite extent of the order of the magnetic length. So when they come together, right, they don't really have to intersect. They could be some distance away, and then there is quantum tunneling between them and things like that, right? Another factor that is gonna complicate this picture is the temperature, right? So if you have some finite temperature, then you can, let's say, it makes tunneling between the between different trajectories easier, right? And as a result, point where you can make it all the way across the sample comes earlier, right? So it would be in some interval, you know, mu star plus minus delta mu, right? And all these factors would effectively broaden this transition and would make the steps much smoother, right? So instead of sharp step, you'll get a smooth step, and the peak in the, so this is sigma xx, peak in the longitudinal conductivity would also broaden, so it will have some width and some non-trivial dependence on the temperature, degree of disorder, and so on. Okay, so what we learn by this arguments is the following. So so first of all, we learn that the states at the states which are away from the center of the Landau level are localized, right? So states away from Landau level center are localized, and but exactly at the center of the Landau level there is an extended state, right? Level extended state must exist. Point where the chemical potential coincides with the energy of the extended state is exactly a point of the phase transition between quantum Hall state and the trivial insulator. So at the center of Landau level, so at energy, let's call it E naught, right? And mu star equals E naught is the phase transition point. So do you guys have questions about this argument and about the about the conclusions of this argument?
Yeah, I didn't really follow, mm-hmm. Getting U plus W and U minus W, what effect that had on the edge states.
I see. So you mean if we start with this picture and then slightly deviate, right? How, what happens to the edge states?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. So let's start with this simple picture where we have regions, you know, which are where we have squares, right? And the squares cover the plane, right? And some of them are black, some of them are white. And now let's increase. So if we increase chemical potential a little bit, right? We are going to effectively increase the area of the black ones, right? So what this is going to do? Instead of point, right? This region is gonna be now underwater, right? So I have to paint this region black, right? So now same thing here. I have to paint this one black, right? Now let's think what happens, right? So now I have, you see, this one becomes a closed trajectory. It cannot go anywhere, right? So is this one. So is this one, right? Now the black region is singly connected. So let's think about the orbits of directions here. So you go here, right? You have to go here. Then because it's singly connected, you just keep following the edge, right? So this is how you get the edge state if you go up. Now if you go down in chemical potential, you're gonna do the opposite thing, right? You're gonna pinch off it the other way, right? So you'll do this, right? And then you will have finite regions of the, you'll have these lakes, right? And they will only support closed orbits, right? So there is no edge state. So effectively the edge states, right? As you lower the chemical potential, edge states start communicating through this extended state in the bulk.
Center.
So this is right. So let's plot, for example, let's plot the density of states. This is actually an important question. Density of states is a function of energy. Right. So initially, in the absence of any disorder, Landau level was just a delta function. Right. There is large density of states at a given energy h omega c over 2. Right. This is no disorder. But now, as we add disorder, as we learned, right, we can introduce the states that this band broadens, right? Because I have lakes, which introduce states with low energy. I have hills, which introduce states with high energy, right? And we effectively learned that, you know, all of these guys are localized, right? These guys are localized. But at the center, there is a state which is extended. Mm-hmm. All right. Any more questions about this part? Okay. If not, let's continue. So, let me make just a side remark about this model, right? So it seems very very naive and so on, but in fact you can make it a little bit more rigorous, and people have done that. So you can think about these states as effectively one-dimensional channels, right? And then you can model. So all you need to supply is what they do when two of them come together and how they come out, right? You can do it by assigning some scattering matrix to each point. Okay. So you see that if you make the scattering matrix very, very asymmetric, right? So if you force, you know, when states, well, let me plot it again, actually, so because it became messy. So let me plot one point where they meet, right? So you see that if I tell them, okay, if you come this way, you have to always go to the left, right? Then they would do simply this, and we will be back to the case where we have edge state and nothing else, right? If we do it the opposite way, right? If we tell them, okay, you come here, you have to go to the right, then we are effectively lowering chemical potential, right? So this is what we just discussed. And then you have no edge state. And to model what happens exactly at the transition point, you have to say that there is equal probability for them to go left to right. And then you can study. So this is a well-defined model which people studied numerically, and you can learn a lot about the nature of this phase transition, critical exponents, and so on. So this is just we're not gonna go into that, but this is just to show you that this model is in fact quite useful. So now there is another, and as you will see, a lot more sort of far going approach to studying this nature of the states and disorder potential, which is due to Laughlin. Okay, so it is useful because it mostly relies on the gauge invariance. So we are going to discuss it next, and also we will see that we will end up with the same picture of what's going on in the disordered Landau level. So. So and also as a side result, we will get another derivation of the quantized whole conductivity. So again, let's ask the same question. So let's start with if we have density of states DOS, right, the function of energy. So in the absence of disorder, you have discrete Landau levels. Disorder broadens them, right? That we. So let's put so this is clean disordered. Let's put chemical potential between Landau levels, okay, between zeros and first Landau level, and let's consider a following thought experiment. So let's consider a strip of strip of 2D electron gas. And let's roll it into a loop, right? So let's say circumference was L, right? So let me make it into a loop like that. Okay, so and assume that there is some source of magnetic field, so all directions still experience magnetic field coming out of the coming through the loop. Okay, and so this would be y coordinate around the loop and x along here. So then I can write down easily the wave functions. So I will still choose the Landau gauge the way we did before, right? Except now my values of the ky momentum would be discrete because the whole thing is finite, right? So but the form of the wave function does not change. So it's simply I ky y e to the L squared x minus ky L squared squared. Right, so this we learned in the last lecture. Now, important thing is that there is a quantization condition. So ky times the circumference of the ring L should be 2 pi n. Okay. So if we are now to plot the energy as a function of ky, right, there are energy is roughly, of course, the same, right? So there are goes like that. But only discrete values of ky are allowed. Right, so it's 2 pi over L, 4 pi over L, da da da, 2 pi n over L. right? So now let's do the following thought experiment. Let's pass flux through this loop, and in a second you'll see why this gives really remarkable result. So what happens as we pass the flux? So first thing that happens, you're introducing the vector potential, and let me pick it in such a way that it just goes around the loop, right? So if I, so flux through the loop, right? Actually, let me call it delta phi, so delta there. So this leads to vector potential delta AY, which is simply delta phi over the circumference of the ring. What is the effect of this? The effect is that now I have to change the quantization condition for my KYs, right? Because in addition, when you go around the loop, now you pick up this gauge phase, which is given effectively by so delta phi small, and it's simply related. You can derive it, so it should be so it should be 1 over h integral e over c a y dy, right? This is extra phase you pick up, and this is how you need to correct your boundary condition by this phase, right? What is this? So this is e over hc a y times l, or delta a y. So it's delta flux that you inserted. Okay, so this is, you know, recall that the flux quantum is hc over e, right? So from here and from here, you get that the phase is equal to 2 pi delta phi over the flux quantum. Okay, so if you insert the flux quantum, you change your phase by 2 pi. So this becomes a gauge transformation then. But if flux is not integer of phi naught, right? Then you have to change your quantization condition. So now ky prime l should be equal to 2 pi n plus this extra gauge phase. Okay? So now that we know this, let's do the following. Let's start with a loop with no flux, and let's very slowly adiabatically insert flux of 2 pi. Okay? So we'll just slowly increase it and then stop it when it reaches 2 pi. What's going to happen to the states? So use this picture, right? So initially we have so let me plot ky, right? Initially I had my original quantization condition, so it was 2 pi over l, 4 pi over l, and so on, 2 pi n over l. Right, as I slowly increase the flux, what I'm doing, I effectively have to increase each ky by delta phi over l, right? So I start moving them. This guy goes here, this guy goes here, right? It increases this one here, right? And once I have inserted flux quantum, what happens that nth guy exactly became n plus first guy, right? So this one ended up here, this one ended up here, this one ended up here, and so on, right? So now if we now remember that all these states are filled when the chemical potential is in the gap, right? This actually means that you really transfer charge across your strip, right? So this means because ky also means x coordinate, right? So this means that you took one charge from here, right? It's now missing, and you brought it all the way to the other edge, right? So this means that such flux insertion leads to charge transfer E. Right, so it means that during this process, current density, right? So the total current I passed, actually, let me think about the current. So current I passed Ix, right? It should be simply E. And if I am, integral of Ix dt should be E, right? Now let us link it to the electric field. So where does the electric field come from in this thought experiment? So of course, when you insert the flux, right, your vector potential is time dependent, and you know when it's time dependent, it induces electric field, right? So you know that we had this delta Ay, right? So in which depended on time, right? So delta Ay of t pointing this way, and you can link it with electric field, right? So derivative of this is exactly electric field. So this means so electric field can be written simply, so you know that simply 1 over c dAy dt, right, ui. This means that, let me write it as 1 over cl derivative of the flux, d phi d delta phi dt, okay? So I know that the current and the electric field must be related via conductivity, right? So I could take a viewpoint and say, okay, jx must be, you know, sigma xy times ey, right? And then I can obtain the total charge transfer by integrating this guy. So charge transfer, it's simply integral jx dt times the, so this is current density, so I need to multiply it by L times L, right? And express it through here, you got sigma xy ey, get from here, so it's 1 over cl d phi dt times dt times L, right? So this one canceled, I get, so this is charge q, so I get sigma xy over c times total flux that I inserted, right? Which is flux quantum. So this is sigma xy over c hc over e. Is there a question? No. So this is sigma xy h over e. Now let's compare. So first, through this picture, we got that the total transfer of charge must be simply electron charge. Now I can just equate this one to E and get the sigma xy. So you get sigma xy equal E squared over H. Right, so you ended up, so using this very general, thought experiment and gauge, simply you used gauge invariance here, right? You extracted, you obtained the quantization of the whole conductivity. This is, well, it's clear, right? It's clear that this is an important question, right? It's clear that all we used here is the duality, right? Duality between the between ky momentum and x coordinate, right? So, and this duality is of course very general, so it holds for any lambda level, right? So, and this is the advantage of this simple argument, that you can show that the whole that the contribution of any field lambda level to the whole conductivity is squared over h.
So this is per lambda level.
Per lambda level, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, what else did we learn from this? Right, we learned that there must be a state sitting in the field band, which, so let's mention consequences of this argument or implications. First thing we learned is that there are states at the Fermi level at the left and right edge. Because otherwise, if we were just dealing with a completely filled band, which is below Fermi level, you know, it would mean that taking something away from there would cost us energy, the gap, right? But clearly, when you do such a adiabatic process, you cannot supply your system with energy, right? So first implication, there are gapless edge states. Second implication is that these edge states can communicate via the field band, right? So when you do this, right, of course, here are your edge states. But when you do this gauge transformation, you shift everything by one. And clearly, there must be a path for them to make it all the way across the sample, right? So this implies that somewhere, at some energy, there is an extended state. In the bulk. So now also another advantage of this argument is that it is rather general, so it can you can use it to show that that the whole quantization survives adding disorder, right? So it can be survives if disorder is added. And to see this, let's slightly modify this argument. So let's complicate it a bit, and let's consider a composite strip loop, right, where it would have a region which is clean. So this would be clean region, and another clean region on the other edge, and then it will be disordered in the middle. This one is disordered, and you can also you can carry out the same argument to show that electrons cannot get stuck in this disordered region. So they have to go all the way from one edge to the other. Because if you assume, right, so let's assume that all the states here are localized, then under the gauge transformation, they cannot transfer charge, right, because they're localized, so they have nowhere to go. So, which means that after this experiment, I will transfer one charge from the edge to somewhere to this region, and one charge from here to here, right? But once again, I know that, first of all, here I have no states because they're all filled because I'm sitting in the gap, right? And second, taking this guy from underneath the gap to the edge where things are gapless would cost me a lot of energy, which I cannot provide in the adiabatic process. So this means that this is not possible, right? We got a contradiction, and the charge cannot get stuck in the disordered region, so it has to go through, which again means that there is extended state no matter how much disorder you add, as long as your chemical potential lies in the gap. Okay? So do you guys have questions about this argument and this way of looking at it? Because everybody seems a bit puzzled or sleepy. Yeah.
You said as long as your chemical potential is in the gap,
right?
So maybe I'm just missing it. I don't see the argument like the as long as part.
Ah, you mean why do I need being in the gap? So
yeah,
right. So think what Okay, let's go back to our picture, right, of the for the density of states. Density of states within given lambda level, right? And I want to put chemical potential here. So you're asking about this argument, right? Clean, disordered, clean. So let me assume, right, that there are absolutely no extended states in the disordered region. Everything is localized, right? Then I know that I cannot go through, right? But I also know that because this region is clean, I transferred one charge from here to here, right? And I transferred one charge from here to here. Now, why is this impossible? So first of all, it's impossible to take an electron from here and put it somewhere here, because you know that here, because we've assumed that all the states are localized here, right? So which means they're somewhere here, which means that they have a, you know, they're under the chemical potential, so they're already filled. And the Pauli principle would not let you put another electron there. So this is first contradiction, right? And okay, this is in principle enough to have one contradiction, but also there is another contradiction that then you also, you know, you ended up with extra charge here, so you had to take it somewhere from here, which means you took charge from somewhere here and put it at the chemical potential, right? And you've earned this energy difference, right? Which is effectively the gap. And this is impossible because you know that the process is adiabatic. You do not supply your system with energy.
So do you count the edge states among the extended states? Extended, do you also mean edge states possibly?
Edge states are extended, but here I'm more interested in the states which connect the different edges, right?
So why is it not possible in this case that all the states that we have in the disordered states are only edge states or all the lines?
What do you mean by edge states? So you could have, right, you could have edge state here, right? This is a very good point, right? But you see, this would mean that I have exactly one edge state here and one edge state here, which means that this is effectively like an insulator, right? There is nothing here. It acts the same way as an insulator. You're right that if you really disorder it, right? If you, well, actually just disordering it doesn't do it, but you need to really forbid electrons from going here. Right, then you would get indeed the situation where you have the edge state here.
So when you said the edge state was extended, it's only extended
in one direction. In one, yeah, it direction, cannot,
as
right,
as opposed to the state in the middle of
this
the
one, which connects you all the way through, in both.
Probably in both directions.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Do you see why? Do you see why? You know what you mentioned is possible, but it corresponds to a different physical situation. It corresponds to you know, it effectively means, right, that you, so let's start, what you describe corresponds to a phase transition, right? So you need to have a phase transition, because let's start with a clean sample, right? Then the dispersion looks like that. Right? So it's just flat Landau level edge states. Now we are going to start increasing disorder in this region. As long as disorder is weak, right, you are doing this, right? So now you see that to get the situation that you described, you need to have something like that. You need to have, and of course you are still in the gap, right? So in order to get where you want to get, you need a situation like that, right? You need effectively very large potential here, larger than the chemical potential. And once you do that, right, you have to go through a point where you effectively you drag your Landau level here through the chemical potential, and you go through a phase transition, right, between the phase with the quantized Hall conductivity. And so once I'm here, right, once it's so large that I went all the way here, right, this is a trivial insulator. There are no electrons here, or only localized electrons. And then, of course, you know, this is a good question, because then once I have such a boundary, clearly clearly my edge state has to be there, right? If I have a boundary between the quantum Hall state and a trivial insulator, there must be an edge state there, right? Because that you can see from another simple argument. So if you consider glue together, so quantum Hall state and trivial insulator, right? So you know there is an edge state here, goes here, cannot go here because there are no states. It has to turn around, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions about this part? Okay, so guys, think about this, because this is not, I mean, this looks quite simple, but in fact it has very very important meaning. And we have another lecture later today, so let me actually ask you what you want to do. So we could go back to our discussion on microscopic devices, which is going to be a lot more concrete, and we will study about effects of electron interactions. So it's not going to be as, I guess, on some level difficult as this, right? Or we could push this even further and show that, in fact, you know, you see that this quantization is very robust, right? And the deeper reason behind it is that, in fact, the whole conductivity of a field band is a certain kind of topological invariant. So we could, originally I was planning to spend the second lecture explaining that and deriving this topological invariant. So which is a very, very powerful result with a lot of implications and applications, right? So if you think you can digest this part by 3:30, we will do that. And if not, we could do something more concrete and study the Coulomb blockade. So this is up to you. So who wants the topological invariant? Okay, majority. Okay, so we will continue, and at 3:30 we will derive this topological invariant.